Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
All right, here we good. All right, so I'm gonna unblock the traffic and then we'll start formally on 1, 2, 3. I'll try not to run anyone over. That's a new one for you, right? It's like, oh my God, it's like, but hopefully one day you're gonna say, oh, that was this one time when PFL, a crazy Brazilian got me on his car.
How are you?
Big honor for me today. Oh. I'm a big fan. How are you?
Very, very good. Thanks. Yeah.
How are we doing with the PFL? I'm very good friends with Eduardo, and I know a lot of backstage, and I tell him, like, PFL, it's one of my favorite events. It's not just because he's a good friend. I like martial arts, so it's like we cannot deny UFC is the largest league, but PFL, it's a good second place, far ahead of everyone else in my opinion. And I was so happy that you were there and do your thing now.
Yeah, it's been very, very exciting and fun to be a part of this organization, see them grow as quickly as they've grown, and, you know, starting PFL Europe this season.
Yep.
Adding and just continuing to develop great talent. Obviously, we're here for the Challenger Series. You know, there'll be eight. This is the second of eight of those Challenger Series shows.
Which is a huge project, right? Like, yeah. Just developing fighters, right? Because I think that's the... No one wants to be that league that brings, like, retired fighters from the UFC.
Well, I mean,
you got to develop some talent.
Everybody,
right?
Has a career arc. You're, yep, on your way up, or you're cresting over, or you're coming down the backside, yep, of your career. That's just how it is. And, you know, it's a great time to be in the sport of mixed martial arts right now because there's a lot of places to fight.
That's right.
A lot of opportunities to show your skill sets and,
exactly,
and go out and be a professional athlete in this society. So, and I think that's a huge thing. And the PFL is certainly doing a great job. They created a format that we're all used to. It's the traditional sports format with a regular season.
The tournament, too. It's so exciting.
A playoff and a championship every single year. You know, you get to follow the people you like or you don't like through a whole season.
That's really good, root against them.
And really get to know them. And I think what's been most impressive has been the fighters embracing the grind, frankly. You know, in the regular season, you're turning around about every 7 or 8 weeks and
that's crazy,
fighting,
right?
Again, but there's a regularity to that. You know when your next fight is. You know who you're fighting and where you're fighting. And most of the fighters don't like waiting for that phone to ring. You know, when's the
That's true, too.
Call?
Yeah.
You know, when's my next fight?
Yeah.
You know, could be next year. You don't know.
Exactly.
We're all trying to make a living, so...
Exactly. It's that you said something very right on the nail with this. They know they're gonna fight 3, 4, 5 times in 1 year, so
yeah,
that's a good job.
Yeah. Well, right? you look at like Carlos Leal or Delano Taylor, who came through this Challenger Series.
Yes.
That, you know, that was at least one, and I think in Leal's situation, he fought 2 other times besides the regular season
that's
and the playoffs.
Right, yeah.
I mean, it's a lot, but. Man, they take it in stride. They front load their camps. They plan it out. And
just what happened with Matheus last year?
With who?
With Matheus from Brazil.
Oh, Matheus,
the heavyweight.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The opportunity just literally fell on his lap.
Yeah,
he's like, hey, I'm in for it.
He took full advantage of it. He did a great job.
Yep.
He had some great fights. He was fun to watch.
How is this commentary thing for you, because it looks so natural, like you've been doing it all your life.
Well, you know, I did do it for Fox and the UFC
for
a while, and that stretch where I had retired for a little bit, and I feel like we as fighters see a lot of the subtle nuances
in
the athletes.
But the communication part of it, it's a gift now and not everyone
has. Well, and, you know, I think working with Sean and Kenny, I think we have fun.
Yeah,
we're having a good time.
Yeah.
We know the sport. Sean has done an amazing job of immersing himself as a great commentator.
He was the fighter, right? Like he just fought a couple of years ago.
He won the first season. Yeah, yeah. He was literally taking his suit off, putting his board shorts on,
that
and going out in the
crazy.
Cage and fighting the same
crazy.
Night. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, yeah. I kept like glimpses here and there. I was like, how's that? And that's crazy.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. And he did a great job. Obviously, won the championship that year, and then retired, and now has just settled right into being a full fledged broadcaster. And
yeah, I talked to a lot of the great legends. I had Lyoto Machida like a couple of days ago.
Oh wow! Okay.
In my studio. And I was like, do you still have that itch to compete on whatever? Like there's a bunch of grappling, like a super matches now. You're like in better shape than some active fighters. So
I've got to try and stay in shape. Can't roll into a set of the Expendables with a guy like Stallone, who's still seven years old,
ripped, cranky,
in great
awesome,
shape. You're not rolling into that set with Dunlops going,
hey, I'm here,
picking lint out of your belly button. It's not going to be good.
You can still beat everybody else, but you got to look
training,
good, right?
The training process keeps me sane. It keeps me active and keeps me sane. I would like to be grappling and competing in some of those competitions, but my neck has just taken a beating from years and years of wrestling. Yeah. And then 14 years of fighting, and that was one of the things that led me to eventually retiring from the sport. I could have still kept grinding out camps and competing at a pretty high level, but I didn't want to sustain an injury in the neck that was going to force me to have a surgery or a fusion and then affect the quality of the rest of my life. So
I
had to make a rational decision and say enough is enough, and it's time to walk away.
It's tough, right?
Yeah, it is.
Especially
very tough.
when you're there competing, like we were just talking about Glover.
Glover
good friends with
won the championship at
fights the fight of his life, and next fight he retires. Like, it's like, wow. He's like, I'm not. And Chael Sonnen said something once that it hit me really real. That was like, it just happens. One night you're there, you say, oh shit, my time comes.
Yeah.
And he said maybe that was Glover's moment that night, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's such a personal thing. You know, people want to knock fighters for not, you know, for staying too long, for not recognizing when it's time to hang it up.
You stopped right after that Lyoto fight.
I had made the decision in that camp that was going to be my last fight. Win, lose, or draw.
Okay.
This was the one I'm going out on. It was time. I was 47 years old, going on 48. And
coming out of three wins.
In the James Toney fight, every old injury I'd had just flared up in that camp for no real reason.
Yeah.
And that was the first time in the back of my head, my internal dialogue was like, maybe that's your body telling you it's time to do something else.
Stop, right?
And I think once you've started that dialogue in your head, it's time to be honest and rational and really take a good hard look at what you're doing. And
I'm having such a moment here right now. It's like I had a few guests that got me really nervous. Vanderlei Silva was one of them. Hicks and Gracie was another one.
Oh, okay.
And having you, like, just looking at you right now, I was like, holy shit, it's Randy. It's like, I'm an old MMA fan. So, like, I'm from the gold era, like Randy versus Chuck Liddell, and we'll go crazy with that. That was your biggest rivalry, and
I think it was the first trilogy in the sport, and certainly, you know, the first fight happened 2 years before The Ultimate Fighter, and obviously the second fight was in the wake of The Ultimate Fighter, you know, the first season of The Ultimate Fighter, which changed the sport and the landscape for everybody. So obviously the amount of fan base that we had through the course of that reality show, more than double, for sure. You know, in many ways, that was the end of the golden era of MMA, because it changed the landscape so significantly. But at the same time, it was a pretty important moment.
I was just telling Eduardo, because like I watched that season. I didn't watch the finals though, but I watched I was watching that the whole season. I think it was like on Spike TV or something,
that,
right?
Yeah, Spike was the first one.
Yeah.
willing to put us on regular television. Nobody would touch us at that
time.
What
a crazy time, right? Yeah. Like, look where the sport is right now, on ESPN, and it was on Fox. And
the fastest growing sports in the world right now.
Yeah, yeah. I heard in Brazil, I think Combat Channel, they just put a post yesterday that PFL signed with them for this season.
Oh, cool.
I don't think it's like it's gonna happen eventually. I don't know if it's official yet because I didn't see anything from the PFL side. But the UFC part ways with the Combat Channel, which is like the fighting channel in Brazil.
Okay.
So they're going with the UFC Fight Pass there, okay, which was very successful. Then Combat was kind of like hanging and said, oh, shit. So they got one, they got Bellator, and now they're doing the PFL. Wow, so they're going to do really well. Karate Zapato, Antonio Carlos, or Carlos, I don't remember his name. I just know him as a shoe face, the Karate Zapato. Oh. So I think it's Carlos Antonio something. He's on the Big Brother Brazil right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh,
so cool. he's really famous right now.
Oh,
he had
cool.
a couple of injuries, so he was like, he got invited. He's there right now. He's the most watched television show in Brazil. And people love him. He's such a great guy.
He is a great guy.
He's such a great guy.
Yeah, he's a fantastic competitor, too.
Exactly. How do you see this new... I'm saying, and it's almost like a funny thing to say that for you, because you fought heavyweight in great shape, but we always see those big, slow, one-punch heavyweight guys. Mm-hmm. And I've been noticing, and I say it on the podcast all the time, that this is a trend that's kind of dying. Like, you see, like, very, very athletic guys, like, super, like, shredded and stuff. Like, we have the Capiloza guy and the Renan
Ferreira
too. Like, giant guys, they fucking moving like a middleweight guy. It's
Andre D'Elia, obviously, who won last year.
Exactly.
Matias Scheffel's another one. Yeah, there's the
super agile
that started a while ago in mixed martial arts. They weren't just big guys anymore. They're big guys that are athletic, that have skill sets and can move. And, you know, it absolutely changed. I mean, you saw guys like, well, certainly Lesnar comes to mind, but Rico Rodriguez and some of these guys that, you know, that weren't just great big guys. They're
You fought very, very Brock skilled. Lesnar. How freaking strong was he?
He's a big guy. Very big athletic man, for sure.
That was crazy. I think that was the biggest WWE slap we got, right? Because, like, those guys can't fight. Then comes Brock Lesnar.
Oh,
right?
Brock
like,
has no a real wrestling shit, background. Right? He was an NCAA champion for Minnesota. He's a legit athlete.
Yeah.
Very, you know.
I mean, those guys are legit. They get super mad at me. I'm not going to get into this. They great athletes.
Absolutely.
You know, we'll leave it like that. But, and so...
Sports entertainment.
Exactly. Yeah, that's a great word. I'm going to start using that because people hate me when I talk about it. So what should we expect for this season? Is there anyone... that we should keep an eye on, like a maybe a Brazilian talent. We just saw Hulk from Jiu-Jitsu lost last week on the Challenger Series. That was a big letdown for us.
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, the Challenger Series is the Wild Wild West. We, you know, so many of these athletes are very talented, but we haven't seen them much. We don't know that much about them, and that's what's really intriguing and interesting. Now, what do we have? 7 or 8 countries represented in this show tonight. So they're pulling talent from all over. We got a gal from Mongolia, which we've never had an athlete.
That's crazy.
Mongolia.
Yeah. That's so cool.
What we have, 22 countries represented in last year's season. So it's definitely a world organization. They're pulling from talent pools all over the place. And I think that's important. And it's just, it certainly signifies how much globally this sport has exploded.
Yeah. There's an actually good friend of mine coming next week. It's the Danilo Marquez. He fought in the UFC and he made a move to the heavyweight division. He's like, I don't know, it's like seven foot tall or something like this.
Oh, wow.
He's a giant guy, has some good boxing background.
Like was Stefan Struve.
Damian. Yeah, yes, yeah, yes, exactly.
Very tall,
yeah, exactly.
Big Dutch
guy. He's a little, he's not as tall as Stefan Struve, but he's there. And he's in that heavyweight pool that I was talking about, like super athletic guys, like they move fast, and it's just super exciting to see it.
Francis Nagano's a free agent right now. I mean,
exactly.
There's a fair chance that the PFO could pick him up and add him to the heavyweight division.
That'd be amazing.
It'd be great.
That would be awesome.
I'd love to see him and Ante D'Elia, you know, hook it up in a pay-per-view
for the
pay-per-view models. You know, our current heavyweight champ and Francis. That would be a great fight.
Because people, I hear a lot of fan talk because I'm much closer to the fans than fighters and events and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, and people are like, oh, this guy, if that guy goes to the UFC, he's going to get beat. Oh, that guy. And people just don't understand for like a D'Elia guy, he's making great money at PFL. He's competing in high level. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to go to the UFC. He's happy where he is, right?
Yeah.
And then you put a fight like that, it's a public surprise because the not like all the public has his eye on him, and then he goes there and make a great fight, maybe even wins. Like Francis doesn't have a great wrestling background. Dante, it's like the size of a wardrobe.
Yeah,
and it's and people just get shocked. You see like Marlon Moraes last year. I'm good friends with Marlon. I was devastated, but you say, look, it's reality.
Yeah.
It's a top level fighter that comes to a different league and it gets outperformed because there's talent everywhere now. That's what you were saying earlier, right?
There's a fighter standing on every street corner that wants a shot and is willing to do what he needs to do to get there.
Exactly. Crazy stuff. What is the, going back to those Chuck Liddell years and the years that you were the champ and competing, what was like a crazy funny story that not a lot of people, I was gonna say no one knows, but if no one knows, there's a good reason for that. So maybe something that not a lot of people know.
Oh man, yeah, those were interesting days for sure. I cornered, you know, Dan Henderson, who's one of my best friends, for a lot of his Pride fights, and I remember being there. Dan had made a bunch of T-shirts that he wanted to sell in Japan for at the Satayama Super Arena, which is a huge arena. I can't remember if he was fighting Vandalay that show or who he was fighting, but he made all these T-shirts. He was trying to negotiate a deal with Pride.
Okay.
And to get a booth on the mezzanine to with everybody else.
Okay,
to sell
like
his
a
shirts.
Little store thing.
They're like, okay, yeah, we'll do that for you, but we're going to take 60% of what. I'm like, I made these shirts, I brought these over here, and you want to take 60% for me
no
to have a booth?
Shit.
So he's like, nah, to hell with that. So we took the duffel bags out to the mezzanine where outside the arena where the subways dump off for the arena. And I started signing autographs on shirts a couple of our buddies started selling shirts there on the sidewalk outside of the arena. Man, we got mobbed. I was sure we were going to get crushed. They started fighting to get in front to take pictures and other stuff. And they backed us up to a wall and I could see people for as far as I could see, and I was like, I started to freak out.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, we're going to have to fight our way out of here. So we had to start stuffing T-shirts in the bag and get the hell out of there because they were going to crush us.
The fans there were crazy. Like Vanderlei said, Vanderlei couldn't go anywhere.
Oh, no, man.
He was like
a huge star.
And I had Shogun, who just retired as well. And I talked to a bunch of the Hanzo Gracie. I'm a Hanzo Gracie guy, so I talked to a guy who was with Hanzo's brother Hayan there at the time, and they were saying like, because those guys are not fighting, and they're just looking from behind, and they was like, it was crazy,
insanity.
If you think you're seeing like fans in Vegas for fights and stuff. But when Conor McGregor fights, that they invade the casinos and stuff. Yeah. So he was kind of like that, but much more well-behaved because the Japanese, like, right?
Yeah.
But they are fans. Like they don't scream and break shit. But
about being in those arenas in the Japanese crowd, you can hear a pin drop.
Yes.
So quiet.
They watch it.
They clap.
Right?
And they're not. It's a completely different thing compared to Brazilian or the American market. I'm good. I had my coffee already this
really?
Morning. If I have two, I start to hover.
Okay. So I put a little thing on Instagram for some people to, I got a little upset. I put something like, hey, send some, I was going to do something like with your picture and say, send some questions to the legend. If you don't know who that is, you shouldn't be following this page. Then I was like, all right, I'll be nice. So look, David is saying, how would you deal with the crowd? Like, let's say you're fighting Machida in Rio or something like that. What was the worst crowd adversity you ever fought, and how would you deal with that?
Probably the craziest crowd I've experienced, and in this particular show, I was in the UK.
Uh-huh.
I was going over there as a commentator. Gonzaga and Krokop were fighting. And even when I fought there in Manchester against Brendan Vera, the crowd there was very, very aggressive. And I remember when I fought Vera, walking into the arena, you know, to go to the cage to fight, my hat got stripped off my head by the crowd.
Wow.
So now I had to do my post-fight interview. That was a sponsored hat. So one of my corner guys has to give me his hat so I could do the interview with my sponsor on there.
Wow.
That hat got stolen walking out of the arena. that Krokop fight.
Can I have a large iced coffee, no sugar and extra cream? This is a thing we do. We always stop for a coffee. Yeah, that's going to be all.
All right, cool.
All right, thank you.
My girlfriend's from Massachusetts. I'm from Seattle, so I'm more of a Starbucks guy, but we have this debate all the time.
Coffee I like the best, believe it or not, it's the McDonald's coffee.
Oh, yeah?
They have good coffee. There's a brand they use. I don't know what it is.
I haven't been in a McDonald's since 1999.
Those days, right?
And that was in Tokyo because they make pancakes. It's pretty tough to screw up a pancake.
Yeah, no shit, right? No shit. It's so funny. So you lost your... Did you see the Rio, UFC Rio, that they were throwing shit at Moreno?
Yeah.
They have a different rivalry.
Danny's first fight, Hendo's first fight, was in Brazil too. And, I can't remember the Brazilian that he fought, but he won and the crowd kind of went crazy and tried to storm the cage and get in the cage. And Dan was a little freaked out. He was like, man, am I going to have to fight all these, you know?
And he would.
Yeah.
And he would.
Yeah, it was pretty
good.
That crowd at the Gonzaga Krokop fight was pretty out of control. And, you know, I'm wearing a suit and tie because I was commentating, and they're grabbing my suit and trying to rip my clothes right off my body. I was like, man, slug my way out of this place,
too. Yeah, right? And Hiki Hoyak, it's asking, how close were you really to fight Fedor? And he was like,
I mean,
sending you...
Obviously, I was holding Dana and the UFC's feet to the fire because that's the fight I wanted. Most of the rankings had me ranked number two in the world and him ranked number one in the world. And so obviously that's the guy you want to fight. If you want to be the best fighter in the world, you got to fight the best guy. So I tried with the UFC to get that fight to happen. They got into a solid negotiation with Fedor and M1 Global because that's who handled Fedor. They came to an agreement on money, but they couldn't come to an agreement on some other terms like a co-promotion. The only way M1 would do that is if UFC would do a co-promotion. M1 and UFC present that fight.
Yeah.
And the UFC said, no way, we're not putting you over. We're not going to do a co-promotion. It's not going to happen.
Because they're going
to... So the whole thing fell apart. Right, so then that's when I left the company to try and pursue that fight and make that fight happen. Mark Cuban was helping me. The UFC was filing injunctions and trying to keep me from going anywhere else, even though my interpretation of the language of my contract would have allowed me to go fight him somewhere else. So that was the question. At some point, you know, they were legally going to try and force me to spend a bunch of money and drag it out as long as they could to keep that from happening. And I'm, you know, 43, going on 44 years old.
Yeah.
You know, the clock's ticking. I don't have time to mess around and wait and make this fight happen.
Exactly.
So I came back, ended up fighting Brock, and finished out my career, which honestly was one of the best contracts I had. But at the same time, that fight
were you able
now? He's tomorrow night is fighting Brian Bader in Bellator at the Forum.
It's
his retirement fight. I think I know Coleman's going to be there. I think Hoyce is going to be there. I think Nogueira is supposed to be a bunch of people that actually fought him. Hendo's going to be there.
You're not flying.
We're all going to kind of. I'm going to go.
Oh, you're going?
Yeah,
oh,
we're going to pay homage to him for his career. His amazing career.
Awesome.
I think that'll be fun. And he's just one of those competitors that's, you know, fought a who's who in the sport, and you know, had some of the most exciting fights, you know, random and all, just all right on down the list. Some of those fights were absolutely incredible. I was at several of them, and that's the one fight that got away that didn't happen.
Do you think he was willing to fight? Because
I think he was willing to fight.
Think
I
don't so? Think he wasn't
think he ever shied away. I think it was M1 and his handlers that wanted certain considerations and certain things to be included to put them over and take them to the next level too. And the UFC wasn't willing to do that.
They got really close a few times, right? With when they bought was it a Strikeforce or the when Verdun fought him, the UFC ended up buying the event after. I don't remember now. I want to say Strikeforce, but
they did absorb Strikeforce.
Yeah, and I think was it there that Fedor was fighting? That he
was
fought.
He Bellator fought when.
No, he fought.
Joker took over Bellator.
He fought Verdun, and Verdun submit him. That's what made Verdun, Fabrício Verdun, famous. I want to say Strikeforce, but maybe
that might be right.
Yeah, WEC maybe. I don't know. I don't know. But it was almost looking like they were chasing, you know, like they were getting the advance, but they were trying to, and just never happens. It's I think it's one of the to see him on a big show here. On his prime, right? Because he's a Bellator, he's a big show. But and what do you think Ryan Bader his last fight? Terrible matchup for him, I guess.
I didn't see it. obviously, I know Bader well. You know, he wrestled at Arizona State. He comes from background. I didn't see his last fight. Generally, if it's one of the guys from Extreme Couture on a card, I'm going to try and tune in.
Yeah.
My guys, but I didn't see Ryan's last fight.
Who you guys have there now? That shining and Rise. It's a big gym. It's a world famous.
A great crew in there. We got a number of PFL athletes are training out of there and doing their camps out of there. Obviously, Francis is probably the biggest name in there right now with everything going on and where he's at in his career. Eric and Ryan and Dennis Davis are, you know, Eric Nixick, my son Ryan, and Dennis Davis are doing a great job with the fight culture and the gym culture and the Extreme Couture. And we have a great team. They're doing a great job.
This is awesome. This is awesome. And just so we finished, how do you see this? You did this very successfully, moving from light heavyweight to heavyweight and back. How do you see this John Jones moving up to?
I mean, John has the skills to compete with the heavyweights. He's a tall, you know, lean, rangy guy at 205. He certainly has the frame to compete at
I think he probably walks around at 235. He's a pretty, he's bigger than I was.
Yeah,
and I competed at heavyweight. So, you know, I think the real question is after 3 years off, now he hasn't fought in three years.
True.
That's a long time. I think that's that a lot bigger issue than actually the transition to the heavyweight
division. Yeah, yeah.
You got to fight the bigger guys in a smarter fashion. You know, where he's gotten used to just going toe-to-toe, you know, using his length. I think he's going to have to rely more on his wrestling background against the bigger guys to gain some of that size.
He was never a power punch guy. He was all, right?
So I think, you know, that's going to be interesting technically to see how he makes those adjustments, but he's certainly more than capable of competing at a high level in the heavyweight division. It's all the other stuff that's more concerning, you know? Is he going to... Yeah,
he's a time off. Is he going to be as fast? Because he's putting a bunch of weight. Yeah.
Well, he has a tendency to get in his own way and cause himself problems.
Yeah.
Stuff that goes on outside the cage.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, too.